Sam had always considered himself the more emotionally resilient one in their relationship. Clementine was the one who made too big a deal of things, who got dramatic, sometimes to the point of hysteria over tiny things, like her auditions, for example. Although, of course, auditions weren't tiny, they were a big deal and nerve-wracking. He got that, but she used to let them consume her. Once Sam had heard Holly telling Ruby, "Mummy is sick with an audition." And he'd laughed, because it was exactly like that. An audition hit her like a virus. But that didn't seem to be the case with this latest audition, even though it was one of the most important of her career. She wasn't saying a word about it. She was just getting on with her practice. Sam wasn't even exactly sure of the audition date, even though he knew it had to be coming up soon. Once, he would have been able to say exactly how many days it was until an audition, because that was how many days it would be until he'd be getting sex again. But that was a long time ago, when sex was still a natural, normal part of the equation, before it got complicated. It was strange how sex had got so complicated, because for many years he would have said it was the least complicated aspect of their relationship. He would have put money on it staying that way. Right from the beginning, their very first time, it had felt so natural. Their bodies and libidos had been in perfect sync. He'd been in enough relationships to know that sex often started out awkward before it got good. But with Clementine, it was straight away good. There were other red flags about their relationship. He wasn't musical. She'd never even been on a date with a non-musician before. He wanted a big family. She could have been satisfied with an only child. But there was never a red flag over sex. He actually remembered thinking, in his youthful, innocent, idiotic way, that their amazing sexual compatibility was proof that they were meant to be together, because that's when they were their honest, true, raw selves. The rest was nothing but details. Sam and Clementine had never needed to talk about sex, and that was such a relief after Daniela, his previous girlfriend, who he had very nearly married and who had liked to discuss and dissect their sex life, and to follow each encounter with an immediate debrief. How can we work together to achieve better outcomes next time? She was a business consultant. She didn't use those words, but he could feel their intention. Daniela had no qualms about beginning a conversation over the breakfast table with a comment like, "When I was blowing you last night," which would make him choke on his cereal and blush like an altar boy. "So cute," Daniela would crow. He loved the fact that he and Clementine kept an element of mystery about their sex life. They treated it with a shy kind of reverence. Sex was like a beautiful secret between them. But maybe Daniela had had the right idea all along. Maybe all that bloody reverence had been their downfall. Because when their sex life slowly changed and began to seem perfunctory and rushed, they didn't have the words to talk about it. He couldn't work out if Clementine even liked sex anymore. And he didn't want to hear the answer if it was no. The idea of performance had begun to announce itself in his head. Everything still operated as it should, but for the first time ever, he'd begun to wonder how he compared to those ex-boyfriends, if their musical ability had somehow translated into sexual ability. He had known it was probably nothing. All parents of young kids went through this. It was so common, it was a cliche. There would be a renaissance, he had told himself. When both girls started sleeping reliably through the night, when they weren't so tired and stressed. He'd been looking forward to the renaissance. And then that night of the barbecue, it had seemed like Tiffany was offering them the key to the door they'd accidentally closed on themselves. She was the gorgeous ringmaster crying, "Right this way for amazing sex again, folks." It had suddenly seemed so easy again. He'd seen it on Clementine's face, she'd seen it on his. And then the universe had seen fit to punish them for their selfishness in the cruelest way imaginable. He saw it again, Oliver and Erica lifting up his baby girl. He saw it a dozen times a day, 100 times. He would never, could never get over it. He couldn't see a way out of this. There was no solution here. He had to change something, fix something, break something. He remembered how Clementine had flinched when he talked about separating. For a moment, she'd looked like a frightened child. He felt bad, or he was aware that he should have felt bad, but really, he felt numb and strangely detached, as if it was somebody else who was saying these cruel things to his wife. "Daddy," said Holly, "you've eaten it all." Sam looked at the empty bucket of popcorn. "Sorry," he whispered. He couldn't even remember eating it. "That's not fair." Holly's enraged face was illuminated by the light from the screen. "Shh," he said helplessly. His throat felt scratchy. There were tiny flakes of corn kernel stuck between his teeth. "But I hardly got any." Her voice rose to an unacceptable level. Someone muttered disapprovingly in the row behind. "If you can't be quiet, we're going," said Sam in a low, shaky voice. "Greedy daddy!" she shouted, and she snatched the container and threw it on the aisle floor next to her. It was calculated, willful naughtiness. It couldn't be ignored. Bloody hell. He picked up the soggy umbrella at his feet, lifted the dead weight of Ruby over one shoulder, stood and grabbed Holly by the wrist. Something twinged painfully in his lower back. Holly screamed blue murder as he dragged her out of her seat and into the aisle. Consequences. He and Clementine made fun of that sort of parenting jargon. But Holly and Ruby had to learn what it had taken Sam all these years to discover. Life was all about consequences. Chapter 74. Oliver decided to go for a run in the rain. He risked injury on the slippery footpaths and also a relapse of his chest cold. But right now, he really needed to clear his head, because his wife was a common thief, and as a result, he would never be a father. He was incorrectly assigning causality, but he was very upset. Angry. Shocked. He double-knotted his shoelaces, stood up, did a few stretches, opened the front door, and nearly closed it again because it was raining so hard. But he couldn't bear to roam around his house while his thoughts scuttled like trapped mice. Running would give him clarity. His nervous system would release a protein that stimulated regions of his brain related to decision-making. He took a deep breath and headed out. Vid and Tiffany were obviously entertaining. There were cars lined up in their driveway and around the cul-de-sac. They were extremely sociable people. As Oliver ran out of the cul-de-sac, he considered his own, significantly smaller, social circle. It might be helpful if he could talk this through with someone, but there was no one. He did not have the sort of friend he could call up for a quiet beer. He was not the sort of person who said quiet beer. He didn't actually drink beer. He had the sort of friends who drank protein shakes at the local health food cafe after a 30K morning bike ride while they discussed training schedules for the upcoming half marathon. He liked his friends, but he had no interest in hearing their personal problems, and he therefore couldn't share his own. He couldn't lean over his protein shake and say, "My wife has been stealing memorabilia from her best friend since she was a kid. What do you reckon? Should I be worried?" He would never betray Erica to another man like that anyway. A confidential discussion with a woman might be better. Maybe if he had a sister or a mother. Technically, he did have a mother, just not the right sort of mother. She would find Erica's stealing screamingly funny or tragically sad, depending on where the pendulum of her mood currently sat. A car drove by and tooted at him in either a supportive or derisive way. Hard to interpret. If Erica had started hoarding, he could have handled that. He'd even mentally prepared himself for that remote possibility, in spite of her constant obsessive decluttering. He'd prepared himself for depression, common while undergoing IVF, for breast cancer, for a brain tumour, for accidental death, and even an office romance. He trusted her, but her managing partner was apparently a ladies' man. But never for this. Never for petty thievery. They were straight down the line people. Their financial affairs were in scrupulous order. He and Erica would welcome a tax audit. "Bring it on," they'd say to the tax office. "Bring it on." His glasses needed windscreen wipers. He kept running while he took them and tried to dry them with the edge of his T-shirt. Useless. She had taken Clementine's stuff, like a Dickensian pickpocket. It was unfathomable. She said she was going to stop and that she would give back what she could over a period of time, but in Oliver's world, people never stopped. His parents had said they'd stop drinking. Erica's mother had said she'd stop hoarding. They truly believed it at the time. He got that. But they couldn't stop. It was like asking them to hold their breath. They could do it for only so long before they had to gasp for air. Another car swept by, and a teenage boy stretched almost half his body out the window in order to yell, "Loser!" Really dangerous activity there, sport. You could get sideswiped by another car. Also, bad-mannered. He took the corner at Livingston. Twinge in that left knee again. Right now, Erica was over at Clementine's, telling her that they wouldn't need her as an egg donor after all. They had discussed it and agreed it would be polite to tell her in person. She'd invested her time doing blood tests and filling in paperwork. They didn't like to waste someone's time. It was Oliver's decision. There were Clementine's unkind comments that Erica had overheard. Repulsed by the idea. "Bitch," he thought, as his foot hit a puddle and water sprayed. Clementine wasn't a bitch. He was fond of Clementine, but the things she'd said had been so unkind and unnecessary. He thought of Erica's little face. She had a small, darling face. And how she must have looked when she'd stood in the hallway overhearing those awful words. His fists clenched. He felt a sudden urge to hit Sam, because he obviously couldn't hit Clementine. The moment passed, as primal urges did. He'd never hit anyone in his life. Anyway, even if Clementine hadn't said what she'd said, obviously Erica's relationship with her was too strange, complex, dysfunctional for this to go ahead. "Absolutely not," he'd said to Erica. "She can't be our donor. It's not happening. It's over. It's finished." He couldn't tell if she was relieved or shattered. He'd been so adamant, but now as he ran, his clothes getting wetter and heavier, You would think there'd be a point of total saturation at which they couldn't get any wetter, but apparently not. He was regretting his decision. Maybe he'd been too hasty. It felt like another loss. Each time he thought he was doing well, avoiding the hope. Each time he told himself, "I have no expectations," but with each new failure it hurt so much, he understood the hope had been there after all, flitting seductively around his subconscious. It didn't get easier either. It got worse. A cumulative effect. Loss upon loss. Like the ligament strain in that left knee. So, what now? Anonymous donor? They were so difficult to find, unless they went overseas. People were doing that. They could do that. He could do it. He could do whatever it took to have his own biological child. He just wasn't sure if Erica could. He had a terrible suspicion that if he said, "Let's forget about the baby," the first expression he'd see on her face would be relief. His heart rate was up very high. He could hear himself puffing. He couldn't normally hear himself puffing. That chest cold had affected his fitness. He concentrated on breathing in rhythm with his footfalls. He saw a blue car coming his way from the opposite end of the street and realized it was Erica, on her way home from seeing Clementine. He stopped, hands on his hips, catching his breath and watching her approach. He couldn't see her face yet, but he knew exactly how she'd be driving, hunched over the wheel like a little old lady, two deep lines between her eyebrows. She didn't like driving in the rain. Her frown was the first thing he'd noticed about her when they worked together, long before they did the squash competition draw together. He didn't know why he found it so appealing. Maybe because it indicated that she took life seriously, like him, that she cared and she concentrated. She didn't just float along the surface, having a great time. He'd never told her that. Women wanted to be noticed for their eyes, not their frowns. She must not have lingered at Clementine's after she'd delivered her news. The car pulled up on the other side of the road. She wound down the window and bent over the passenger seat to look up at him anxiously. "You shouldn't run in this weather," she shouted. "You could slip. You haven't even finished your antibiotics." He headed over to the car, opened the door, and got in next to her. The car was warm. She had the heater cranked up. Water slid off him, pooling all around him on the leather seat. He could feel it squelching. He was reminded of the night they pulled Ruby from the fountain, how they'd worked together, how they hadn't needed to talk, they'd just acted. They were a good team. Erica sat, still hunched over the steering wheel, studying him silently, frowning ferociously. He put his hand to the side of her face. "Sorry," he said, going to draw it away. "I'm all wet." But she grabbed it back and tilted her warm face into the palm of his cold hand. Chapter 75. Vid's house was full of people and music and the smell of good food, which was what he liked, what he loved. What was the point in having a big house like this unless you filled it with people? The occasion was no occasion. What did you need an occasion for? You didn't. It was spur of the moment. He'd made some phone calls, and now the house was full. It was still raining, of course, but that did not mean all the fun had to stop. They were warm and dry in here. The rain would not stop them from living their lives. They should do this more often. They should do it every weekend. All four of his daughters were here tonight, and at this point, they were all talking to him. A rare and wonderful event. Of course, his older girls all wanted something from him. But so be it. That was parenting. Adriana wanted him to agree to do a choreographed father and daughter dance at her wedding. It would be filmed, and then she'd post it on YouTube. It was her dream to go viral. He would do this, of course, although he was pretending he hated the idea. He already had a few moves in mind. Eva and Elena wanted money, he assumed, and of course they would get it. He'd transfer it into their accounts tonight, after they left. All that was in question was how much. He would see how their negotiating skills were developing. Eva would get hysterical within seconds. He'd been trying to explain to her that hysteria was not an effective negotiating tactic ever since she was 2 years old. His baby, Dakota, didn't want anything. She was happy again, although he hadn't realized just how sad the poor little angel had gotten. Tiffany's idea of turning up at the cellist's house had been excellent, even though they had never even offered them a drink. It had been wonderful to see little Ruby so happy and healthy after the terribleness of that night. It had been a giant weight off his back. He had walked out of that tiny cramped house feeling straighter and lighter. Also thirsty. Clementine and Sam had been silent and strange, but they had invited Dakota to Holly's birthday party. Hopefully, they'd remember to feed their guests. He'd take some food along, just in case. He was hopeful they might all still be friends. Tiffany was not as hopeful as him. She said only Dakota was invited to the birthday party, not them. She said it was probably a drop-off party. He didn't know what she was talking about. He would take meatballs, maybe. A case of champagne. "You having fun?" said Tiffany, meeting him in the kitchen as they both collected more plates of food to pass around. "No! Why do we do this? I just wanted a quiet night at home. And look! The house is filled with all these people wanting to be fed. How did this happen?" "I have no idea. It's a mystery." Tiffany closed the fridge door with her hip and smiled up at him, both her hands filled with trays. "Apparently the sun is coming out tomorrow. We should invite everyone to stay the night and have a barbecue lunch tomorrow. Continue the party all weekend." "Excellent idea," said Vid. He knew she was joking, but he was wondering if this was a possibility. He kissed her and stuck in his tongue just to make her say "Vid," except she gave back as good as she got. She liked to surprise him. "Jesus, get a room," said his cousin, walking into the kitchen and straight out again. Tiffany raised an eyebrow and sashayed off with an exaggerated swing of the hips, just for him. There was something else making Vid happy, to do with Tiffany. What was it? Was his mind losing its edge? No, his mind was a steel trap. Of course, that little matter of the dickhead. It was all under control. Yesterday, she'd come home from Dakota's new school and said that she'd run into the wife of that old client of hers and they weren't coming to Santa Anastasia's after all. This was good, because he knew she'd slept with that dickhead. He knew it because of her left nostril. Vid played poker once a month with a group of friends. His friend Raymond had told him years ago how poker players tried to work out each other's tells, the little giveaways that showed when they were bluffing. Raymond said, "You, my friend, have about a dozen tells. You blink, you wink, you twitch, you virtually have a seizure. You're the worst bluffer in the world." Vid did okay at poker, though, because he might have been the worst bluffer in the world, but he had the best luck. He drew great hands. He'd always been lucky. He had great luck in business. He had many, many good friends. He'd married two gorgeous women, even if the first one had turned out to be a crazy-in-the-head bitch who tried to turn his daughters against him. But that was okay, because he'd got even luckier with his second wife, walking Viagra, and he loved her like crazy. Tiffany was a great poker player, not as lucky as him, but she could do a beautiful poker face. It worked on him for years, but then one day he broke her code. Tiffany had a show, her left nostril. Whenever she lied or bluffed, her left nostril quivered, just once, a teeny tiny movement, like a butterfly wing. Vid had confirmed it by studying his wife on those occasions when he knew for a fact she wasn't telling the truth. For example, when she answered Dakota's questions about Santa Claus, or when she told her sisters that she was flying economy when really she'd booked business class tickets. Her sisters had some strange problem with flying business class, as if it was somehow sinful. It was conclusive. The nostril never lied. He never told Tiffany, of course, because it was very handy. His secret superpower, to see straight through her poker face. Sadly, she did not at all like the red lingerie he'd bought her for Christmas. So when he asked his wife, "Did you sleep with him?" all he had to do was watch her nostril. And there was the answer. She said no, but the answer was yes. Yes, she'd slept with him. It was fine. It was no problem. It was maybe a slight problem. Say Vid had been at a school concert, and he'd seen this dickhead looking at his wife in a disrespectful way, he might have been tempted to hit him. Assault and battery, that would be. Or, say, he and this dickhead had ended up cooking at a sausage sizzle together. There were always sausage sizzles, even when you paid $1 million in school fees. And the dickhead made some remark about Tiffany. It might even be an innocent remark, but say, Vid took it the wrong way because of what he knew. And say, he went home and the thought got trapped in Vid's head, like thoughts sometimes did. And say, in a moment of madness, he got on the phone to his friend Ivan and he arranged to have the dickhead's knees broken. Ivan was always going on about how if Vid ever needed someone's knees broken, then Ivan was his man. Tiffany said Ivan was joking. Ivan was not joking. But all was good because the dickhead was safely on his way to Dubai with his knees intact. Vid would therefore not end up in jail. He'd never knowingly broken the law, but he could. The potential was there, maybe not to kill, but certainly to maim, and he did not want to go to jail. The food! The clothes! Vid shuddered at the thought. And for now, Vid was not in danger of breaking the law. It was lucky. He was so lucky. That's why he felt happy. And Dakota's reputation at the school was safe. She could be school captain if she wanted. He was sure those people would love Dubai. Interesting place. He'd read an article just the other day about the Dubai Food Festival. They had something called the Big Grill. It sounded amazing. Why do you look so happy? Said Dakota. And goofy. Vid regarded his daughter, who was now in the kitchen returning an empty tray. She dimpled up at him, and she looked at that moment extremely pretty. Hail Mary, Mother of God, please don't let her grow up as sexy as her mother. Because I'm happy, you know, said Vid. He lifted Dakota up under her armpits and spun her around. He couldn't spin his older daughters anymore. Eva looked like she weighed as much as a small truck. Are you happy? Pretty much, said Dakota. She put her mouth to his ear. How many more minutes before I can go read my book in my room for just a little while? 30, said Vid. 10, said Dakota. 20, said Vid. Final offer. Deal. Dakota held out her hand. They shook on it. He put her back on the floor. The volume of the music at the front of the house shot up to nightclub level. Someone called out, "Whoa!" in a scandalized tone that could only mean that Tiffany was dancing, while someone else shouted, "Where's Vid?" "Here I come," bellowed Vid. It was lucky that Harry from next door was resting in peace. Chapter 76. Clementine woke to a glorious absence of sound. All she could hear was silence, and then the familiar bubbling melody of a kookaburra's laugh. It pierced her heart, as if she'd been away from Australia for a long time and was finally home. She opened her eyes, and the light felt clean and bright and imbued with significance. "It's stopped," she said out loud to Sam. "It's finally stopped." She hadn't let herself believe the weather forecaster's promise of sunshine by Sunday. She went to wake Sam to shake his arm, but then she saw his empty side of the bed and remembered that he wasn't there. He was asleep, as usual these days, in the study, and she felt humiliated that she'd spoken out loud. His absence, this hopeful, happy morning, felt freshly painful, as if it were new. She sighed and turned over on her stomach, lifting the corner of the curtain to look at the newly minted blue sky. They would take the kids out in the sun, but wait, no, they couldn't, because today she and Sam were booked in to do a first aid course at the local high school. They'd rescheduled it a few times already, and she was determined they'd do it today. She couldn't keep on traipsing across Sydney doing those talks, solemnly telling people about the importance of first aid training, like she was some sort of school prefect for the world, handing out her little leaflets, when she'd never done one herself. Sam's parents were going to look after the girls for the day. It might actually be quite fun and stimulating to learn something new together, Sam's mother had said hopefully. There was a suspicious Pam-like flavor to Joy's tone. The mothers were circling. Clementine suspected her mother had been on the phone to Sam's mother, worrying over the state of their marriage. It was interesting how a marriage instantly became public property as soon as it looked shaky. She looked at the clock and saw that she'd slept later than normal. It was past 6, but that was fine. She could fit in a solid 2 hours of practice before the girls woke. The audition was only a week away now. This was the home stretch. You had to time it right, like an athlete, so that you peaked on audition day. She put on her old shapeless blue cardigan over her pajamas. For some reason, the cardigan had become her practice cardigan, and went quietly downstairs. The absence of the sound of rain opened up a soaring sense of space around her, as if she'd gone from a tiny warm-up room into a concert hall. She hadn't realized how oppressive that background noise had been. As she rosined up her bow and the dust-flecked early morning sun created tiny glints of jewel-like light around the room, on the glass of their grandfather clock, on a picture frame, a vase, she felt a deep sense of peace about her progress. The strange thought occurred to her that she wasn't resisting this audition, as she had so often in the past. She wasn't wasting precious energy bemoaning the injustice of the system, the oversupply of qualified musicians on the audition circuit, the fact that auditioning was a skill entirely separate from someone's playing ability. Ruby's accident had somehow stripped her clean of what now seemed like a sort of petulant pride, of fear masquerading as outrage. "Good morning." Sam stood at the doorway. "Good morning." She lowered her bow. "You're up early." "The rain has stopped," he said glumly. He yawned hugely. He looked so pale and haggard in the sunlight. She wanted to hug him, and at the same time she kind of wanted to slap him. "I might take the girls to the park, so you can practice." "We're doing that first aid course today," said Clementine. "Remember?" "I might give that a miss," he said. Each word was a sigh, as if it were an effort just to speak. "I'll stay home, with the girls. I'll do it another time. I'm not feeling great." "You're fine. You're doing it," said Clementine, as if you were one of the children. "The girls are excited about spending the day with your parents. They have plans." He made a sound, an exhausted exhalation, like an elderly person seeing yet another flight of stairs to climb. "Fine. Whatever." He turned around and slouched off. It was like being married to an octogenarian who spoke like a teenager. "It starts at 10, she called out after him briskly. She felt so brisk today. She was the very essence of brisk. And if he didn't pull himself together soon, she was going to briskly tell him that he wasn't the only one capable of throwing around dramatic, hurtful words like separate. Chapter 77. "Doesn't that look pretty?" said Oliver. "What?" said Erica. They were standing in her mother's disgusting, squelchy front yard. It seemed unlikely that there would be anything pretty to look at. She followed his gaze to her mother's liquid amber, where tiny, glistening raindrops quivered on each leaf in the sunlight. "Look at them sparkle, like tiny diamonds," said Oliver. "You're in a poetic mood," said Erica. "It must be because they'd had sex last night for the first time in a week." Her eyes returned back to her mother's stuff. Now that the sun was out, everything looked even more depressing than it had the day she'd been here in the rain. She kicked at an unopened, soft, sagging cardboard box with an Amazon label, and the puddle of dirty water on top sloshed onto her foot. A leaf clung to her shoe, and she tried to kick it off. "What are you doing, darling? Line dancing?" Erica's mother appeared in the front yard wearing a red and white polka dot scarf tied over her head and blue denim overalls, like a 1950s housewife ready to start spring cleaning. She stuck her thumbs into the pockets of her brand new looking overalls and kicked one leg behind the other, and then out to the side while humming some twangy song. "You're quite good at that, Sylvia," said Oliver. "Thank you," said Sylvia. "I have a line dancing DVD somewhere if you'd like to borrow it." "I'm sure you could put your hands on it quite easily," said Erica. Sylvia gave a pretty little shrug. "It's no trouble." She looked around the front yard and sighed. "Oh, goodness, what a mess. That rain was quite extraordinary, wasn't it? We've got quite a task ahead of us." Today's choice of delusion was that Sylvia's front yard looked like this because of the rain. "Well, we're not alone," said Sylvia with a brave tilt of her chin. "People across the state are out there today, mucking in, cleaning up." "Mum," said Erica, "those people had their houses flooded. This isn't because of a flood of rain. It's a flood of crap." "I was watching TV this morning," continued Sylvia obliviously, "and it was so inspiring. Neighbours helping neighbours. I had tears in my eyes." "Oh, for God's sake," said Erica. Oliver put his hand on Erica's shoulder. "The things we cannot change," he murmured. He was quoting the Serenity Prayer to her. Oliver went to Al-Anon meetings for families of alcoholics. Erica didn't want to learn serenity.
"What's that, Oliver?" said Sylvia. "How are your lovely parents, by the way? Were they affected by the rain?"
She was as sharp as a tack, that woman.
"I haven't seen them in a while. We must all get together and have a drink."
"Mum," said Erica. "We should," said Oliver, "although, as you know very well, with my parents, it's more likely to be 10 or 20 drinks."
"Ah, they're good fun," said Sylvia fondly.
"Yep," said Oliver, "they are that.
Oh, look, here comes our skip bin."
"Great, what can I do?" said Sylvia as the truck pulled into the driveway and slowly lowered the massive bin.
"Stay out of our way," said Erica.
"Yes, although you'll need me to make sure you don't accidentally throw out anything important," said Sylvia.
"Do you know what I found the other day caught up in a box of old papers? The funniest little photo of you, me, and Clementine."
"That seems unlikely," said Erica.
"What do you mean it seems unlikely? Wait till you see it. I guarantee you will laugh. Now, just imagine if we'd thrown away that precious memory. You and Clementine must have been about 12, I think. Clementine looked so young and pretty in it. She seemed kind of worn out the other night, to be frank. Not aging well. You should take a look at it, Oliver. See what your future daughter might look like."
Oliver's face closed down. "That's not happening now."
"What? Did she pull out on you after you saved her child's life?"
"We pulled out," said Erica.
"Not her.
Us. We changed our mind."
"Oh," said Sylvia. "But why? That's terrible news. I'm crushed."
Erica watched in amazement as her mother conveniently forgot everything she'd said on Thursday night and made herself the victim.
"You let me get my hopes up. I thought I was going to be a grandma. I was looking at those pretty little girls at Pam's place and thinking how nice it would be to have a grandchild of my own. I was thinking I could teach her how to sew, like my grandmother taught me."
"Teach her how to sew?" spluttered Erica. You never taught me how to sew.
You probably never asked, said Sylvia. I've never seen you with a needle and thread in my life.
I'll just go pay the driver for the skip, said Oliver.
I'll go inside and see if I can find that funny little photo, said Sylvia quickly, just in case, God forbid, anyone would expect her to pay for anything.
Erica took the opportunity to snap on some plastic gloves, bend at the knees, and pick up a broken laundry basket filled with miscellaneous junk. A headless doll, a sodden beach towel, a pizza box. She carried it to the skip bin and chucked it in, hard, like a grenade. It landed with a bang against the metal. Throwing stuff out always gave her a wild, terrified feeling, as if she were running into battle, screaming a war cry.
Geez, you've got a job ahead of you, said the skip bin guy as he folded up the yellow form Oliver had handed him and stuffed it in his back pocket. He crossed his arms across his barrel chest and studied the front yard with an expression of pure disgust.
Want to lend a hand? Said Oliver.
Nah, you're on your own there, mate. Better you than me.
He kept standing there, shaking his head, as if he were there to supervise.
Well, on your bike, then, said Erica irritably, and she heard Oliver stifle a laugh as she turned away to pick up the old Christmas tree. A Christmas tree, of all things. She couldn't remember ever having a Christmas tree growing up, and yet here was an old mangled one with a single sad strand of gold tinsel. The driver roared off in his truck, and Erica threw the Christmas tree in the bin, while Oliver picked up a broken pedestal fan in one hand and a bag of rubbish in the other. Her mother came out the front door, triumphantly holding a tiny photo between her thumb and finger. A miracle that she'd found something.
Look at this photo, she said to Erica. I guarantee it will make you laugh.
I guarantee it won't, said Erica sourly. Her mother leaned over and removed a tiny piece of gold tinsel from Erica's shirt.
Yes, it will. Look.
Erica took the picture. She burst out laughing. Her mother danced around, hugging herself with delight.
I told you, I told you.
It was a grainy black and white picture of herself, her mother, and Clementine, sitting together on a roller coaster. It had been taken by one of those automatic cameras timed to capture passengers' reactions at the most terrifying moment of the roller coaster ride. All three of them had oval-shaped mouths, frozen forever mid-scream. Erica was leaning forward, both hands clutching the safety bar, as if she were pushing it to go faster even as she threw her head back. Clementine had her eyes squeezed shut, and her ponytail flew in a vertical line above her head like the Pope's hat. Sylvia had her eyes wide open and both arms flung up in the air like a drunk girl dancing. Terrified, hilarious joy. That's what you saw in that photo. It didn't matter if it was accurate. You couldn't look at it without laughing. She and Clementine were wearing their checked school uniforms.
See? Aren't you glad I kept it? Said Sylvia. Show it to Clementine. See if she remembers that day. I must admit I don't actually remember that day specifically, but you can see how happy we were. Don't you pretend you had a terrible childhood. You had a wonderful childhood. All those roller coasters, remember? My goodness, I loved roller coasters. You did too.
Her eye was caught by something.
Oliver, what have you got there? Let me just check that.
Oliver, who had both arms wrapped around a disintegrating cardboard box, hurried off to the skip bin, with Sylvia running behind him, calling out, Oliver! Oh, Oliver! This was life with Sylvia. Absurd, grotesque, infuriating, and sometimes every now and then, wonderful. They were meant to be at school that day. It was late November, summer in the air. It was Erica's 12th birthday. No, it was a week after Erica's 12th birthday. Her mother had forgotten the actual birthday. Sylvia had difficulties with dates, but this time she'd decided to redeem herself with a spontaneous, crazy gesture. She'd turned up at school and taken both girls out of class for a trip to Luna Park without, by the way, Clementine's parents' permission or knowledge. It would never happen today, and Erica was horrified now on the school's behalf. The legal ramifications were mind-boggling. Clementine wasn't allowed to go on a roller coaster because her mother had a phobia about them. She had been deeply affected by the story of a fairground ride accident in which 8 people had died at a country fair, years before Clementine and Erica were born. "They don't maintain those machines," Pam always said. "They are death traps. They are accidents waiting to happen." But Erica and Sylvia loved roller coasters. The scarier, the better. No decisions, no control, no discussion. Just the rush of air into your lungs and the piercing sound of your own screams before they're snatched away by the wind. It was one of the very few strange, random things they had in common, an enjoyment of scary roller coaster rides. Not that they went on them all that often. Erica could remember only a handful of occasions, and this was one of them. Erica knew Clementine had loved that day too. She had been in one of her hectically happy moods. It was a day where Erica didn't second-guess herself or their friendship. There had been days like those, days where her mother was her mother and her friend was her friend. She slid the photo into the back pocket of her jeans and watched as Sylvia leaned so far into the skip bin to rescue something that she nearly toppled in. She got herself back upright, adjusted her polka dot headscarf, and faced Oliver, hands on her hips.
"Oliver, there's nothing wrong with that fan," she cried. "You retrieve that for me, please."
"No can do, Sylvia," said Oliver.
Erica turned away to hide her smile. She studied the sunlight shining on the rain-speckled tree. It actually did look pretty, like a Christmas tree. She tipped her head back, enjoying the sun on her face, and saw the lady who lived across the road, the one who loved Jesus but sure didn't love Sylvia. She was standing at her upstairs window, one hand on the glass, as if she were cleaning it. The lady seemed to be looking straight back at Erica. And just like that, it happened. Erica remembered everything. Chapter 78, The Day of the Barbecue. Erica stood at the entrance to the backyard, clutching the stack of blue china plates Vid had handed her in the kitchen. They were beautiful solid plates with intricate patterned designs. Willow pattern, thought Erica. She remembered that her grandmother had once had plates exactly like these. Her grandmother used to have a lot of beautiful things, and Erica had no idea what had happened to any of them. They were probably lost somewhere, or broken, buried beneath the sedimentary layers of crap in her mother's house. That was the irony. Her mother loved things so much that she had nothing. Erica gripped the plates tighter, filled with an overwhelming desire to keep them. She imagined hugging the plates to her chest and running next door to hide them away in her own kitchen cupboard. She would not do this. Of course, she would not do it. For a moment, she was terrified she would do it. She stood without moving for a moment. When she was little, she used to like going into her backyard and turning round and round in circles until the world spun. That's exactly how she felt now.
Why had she deliberately done that? It wasn't a nice feeling. She must be drunk. Why would Oliver's parents choose this feeling, plan for it, long for it? It was awful. She focused on the little girls. Ruby toddled out of the gazebo, holding whisk in one hand, and Holly's little blue sequined bag in the other. Holly wouldn't like that. No one was allowed to touch her rock collection. Where was Holly? Sure enough, Holly suddenly appeared behind Ruby, shouting something Erica couldn't hear over the sound of classical music pouring again from Vid's sound system. Ruby looked over her shoulder and quickened her pace, her wings bobbing behind her. It was so cute. She looked determined to escape with her contraband. Careful, thought Erica. Are your parents even watching you? She looked over at the adults. Oliver was nowhere to be seen. Clementine was talking to Vid. Tiffany was talking to Sam. The four of them were just totally thrilled by each other. She and Oliver might as well not be there. They were spoiling the fun. Neither Sam nor Clementine was watching the girls right now. It was neglectful. Negligent. She watched Vid pick up a knife and pretend to conduct along to the music. She saw Clementine laugh merrily. What had she said exactly earlier, upstairs? What was that word she'd used? Repulsive. The idea of donating her eggs to Erica was repulsive. All that time, she and Oliver had spent discussing it. She thought of Oliver telling their IVF doctor, "We're going to approach Erica's best friend. They're like sisters." Like sisters. What a joke. What a lie. Erica watched Clementine pull her hair over her shoulder as Vid fed her a spoonful of something and she leaned forward to take it. Clementine was like that princess in the fairy tale who received all those gifts from her fairy godmothers at her christening. You shall have parents who adore you. Ding! You shall have musical talent. Ding! You shall live in cleanliness and comfort. Ding! You shall fall pregnant naturally as soon as you feel like it and go on to give birth to two beautiful daughters. Ding, ding! One old fairy got left off the invitation list. The uninvited crone. Erica hadn't been invited to a lot of parties when she was a kid. What did the uninvited fairy do? She laid a curse of some sort. You shall prick your finger on a spinning wheel and die, so watch out for needles. But then a nice fairy stepped in and modified it. You'll just fall asleep for 100 years. That's not too bad. Wait. It was Sleeping Beauty. The fairy tale was Sleeping Beauty. She was really very drunk. She should move from this spot. But she didn't move. Sleeping Beauty. Clementine did like her sleep. Sleeping Bloody Beauty. That's exactly right. You're asleep right now. You're not even bothering to watch your children. There was a sound from somewhere. A sound trying to slide beneath the classical music pouring and tumbling from Vid's sound system. Is Clementine performing? Of course she's not performing, Erica. You're in the neighbor's backyard. You're drunk. This is drunkenness. Your brain has turned to water and your thoughts are slipping and sloshing all over the place. She heard it again. It was knocking. That was the sound. A rapid knock, knock, knocking. She saw her mother's face, finger to her lips. Don't answer the door. Yes, Mum. I know what I need to do. Not make a sound. We never, ever answer the door. We don't want people to see our filthy secret.